We're going to continue Ritz Hashem on this sugya of Orla. I mean, we pretty much finished Orla, but not quite. And then we move on to the sugya of Truma, the sugya of Yayin Lenazir. And in every case, we're trying to figure out whether or not it's also Bachila, only Achila, also Banah. In the case of Orla, we said that Orla is also Banah. You're not allowed to benefit at all from Orla. And the question there was why we needed a special pasuk to teach me that there's an Iser Orla. You remember there was a special derivation. How are you, Reuven? Everything's good? So it says, V'yaraltem Orloso Arelim Lo Yochal. And we have three psukim, and we derived not only a general Iser Hanoah, but a big Chiddush, that it's also Hanoah and Orla, even with regard to Klipei Orla, and you can't use the Klipei Orla for a dye, for Tzviya, and we can't use the oil that's extracted from Zasim, from olives of Orla, for the sake of lighting a Ner. So we have an Iser Tzviya, and we have an Iser Hadlaka. And we had a long discussion yesterday about what the Chiddush was in these cases. And again, there's a common name that they give girls, they call Tzviya. You've heard that name?
Yeah,
that should not be confused with the Tzviya that we're talking about. Our Tzviya is with an ayin. Okay, so that's dying, you know, with D-Y-E, dying. No, you know, nothing morbid about it. Actually, it's very colorful. Yeah. So Tosis quotes a Gemara Bava Kama, which is called Chazusa V'Alma, that the dying is not much of a Hanoah. It's not really that tangible. The object is pretty much the same. You just change its color. And with regard to Adlaka, it was Tokadei Biur. The Torah tells you to burn the Arla, and that's what you're doing. So you're benefiting while you're burning it, but maybe it's not burnt up yet. And the oil is still in existence, and so forth and so on. So Gemara basically wants to know, according to Rabbi Avo, why is it necessary to derive the Iser Hanoah from this triple Orla that it says in the Pasuk? Why do we need all that? After all, according to Rabbi Avo, whenever the Torah prohibits Achila, then by definition it includes what?
Hanoah
as well. And that question is really... it's really a question even on Chizkiyah, because the pasuk says Arelim lo ye achel, and if you recall, Chizkiyah admits that there is an Iser Hanoah when it says lo ye achel, like in the case of Chametz. So the Gemara answers that the reason why I have a push here, I need a special drasha and yalfusa to derive the Iser Hanoah and Orla, is because the Torah adds the word lachem in the pasuk. And it says, Shalosh Shanim Yilachem Arelim Lo Yochel. And the word Lachem means it's yours. Yours meaning that you can even enjoy the benefit of it. So this is a principle that's going to come up over and over again. So we better get it straight now. Because again, this will give us a key to understand a lot of what's going to happen around the bend here over and over again. And that's called Lachem. Whenever the Torah says it's yours, now in the plural that's called lachem, in the singular that would be lo, it's his, meaning it's yours, or lacha, it's yours. And the Torah, by implying lacha or lachem, is telling you that you could have hanoah, you could benefit from it. It's yours to use, to enjoy the benefit of it. Now, we have a very strange kind of situation. We derive from this triple heading, Iser Hanoah and Orla, and we needed that because the Torah fooled us and misled us by saying Lachem. Why did the Torah tell me Lachem? Why didn't the Torah just tell me that Lo Ye Achel, and then Mimanavshach, even though I hold like Chizkiya Lo Ye Achel entails an Iser Hanoah, or I hold like Rabbi Avoh that every Achila implies an Iser Hanoah. Why didn't the Torah have to give me Lachem and throw me off course over here in order to get me back on track? And here's where the Gemara says, and these are the last three words on Daf Chav Beis Amid Beis, and we're going to study today Chav Gimel Amid Aleph. that the word lachem is very necessary. And it comes to include a certain category of a tree that was planted in a very particular way or a very particular place that you would have thought is not included in Arla. And the Torah wants to say it's included in Arla. So what we're doing with the word lachem is we're broadening the scope and the application of the Iser Arla to include even a case where it's Natua L'Rabim. So you'll turn now to Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph and you'll see Natua L'Rabim. Okay? Now what is Natua L'Rabim? Now what we want to spend a few minutes here is trying to understand a machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos, two approaches, two definitions of Natua L'Rabim. Okay? Now for this we really need a chart. I don't have the ability right now to create that chart, so if anybody here can take out a piece of paper, do we have like a nice okay, that's good enough. No, that's fine. You know, I'm just thinking it's not this. Sometimes you need a lot of paper for a chart. This is not such a large, complicated chart, but we need
the back of that paper empty. I can use.
I don't know.
Yeah, just give it to me.
You want to take this? I mean, it's got to be some English on the other side. But, okay.
Yeah.
All right. But again, you know what, Phil? We're going to have to wait to... First,
wait until you explain.
No, yeah, right. First we'll get the whole picture, then I think it'll be easier to make the chart.
Excellent.
That's what I think we should do.
Or I can do it on the board.
Okay. Now, what we have to know, there are a number of different elements and factors that kick into this question of how to interpret the words Natua L'Rabim. That's the heading. You know, the koteret here is Natua L'Rabim. Now, what are the different elements that we're going to have to try to classify here? Maybe make a chart out of them. So I'm going to just list a couple of questions that we have to ask. Number one, where is it planted? Is it planted in private property or in public property? A second question we're going to have to ask. Was it planted for the purpose of an individual? For my own personal purposes, I'm the note, I'm the one who planted it. Even if I planted it in the public area, but I might have done so for my own benefit. Again, whether or not the municipality could sue me for that, for absconding with public property, I don't know. But be that as it may, I planted it in a public area for my purposes. Let's say I live somewhere in the neighborhood, I'm going to always come and harvest the fruits. Or did I plant it for the purpose of the rabbin? Now that second possibility could overlap with a planting in a private property, meaning I could plant something in my own private backyard, but I'm not makpid. I don't care if anyone comes and takes the fruits. So here in this case, it's not bimakom rabim, but rather it's li rabim, meaning it's for the sake of the rabim. You know, I'm a very magnanimous fellow, and I have a tree, a beautiful tree in my backyard, and I will invite the public to enjoy the fruits of the tree. That's called li rabim, otherwise known as litzorech rabim. Okay, so these are some of the factors that are going to play into the equation. Rashi says the following. Rashi says, Litzorech Rabim. Now, when I first read this Rashi, Litzorech Rabim, and I stopped prematurely because, you know, I didn't read the next part of Rashi, my impression was that the case that we're dealing with is Litzorech Rabim might have been planted in my own backyard. But it was Litzorech Rabim, right? That description that I had before, this very magnanimous fellow who wants to invite the public to enjoy the benefit of his the fruits of his tree that are planted in his own private backyard. Like, for example, there's a fellow here, just a mamish a block away from us, called Emmanuel, and he has beautiful fruit trees. I'm not saying he invites you to take from the trees, but he invites you to come in and make the Birchas Ha'ilonos, we're not that far away from Birchas Hailonos. In fact, if it was a regular year, not a leap year, it would be in about a week or two, we'd be reciting Birchas Hailonos. And he did a beautiful job there. You have a big sign, and everyone's invited in anytime, day and night. You know, you come in, and he has the bracha, and it's engraved in granite with different colors, and it's mamish right here. It's kedai to walk by to see it on a nice day, just to get a picture of what he did. And he has a number of different fruit trees in his backyard. So here Rashi says, Litzorech HaRabim. We're talking about this very fine fellow who cares about the Rabim, and he's not makpid, and anyone called Dichvin Yesev Yechel could come in and eat his fruits.
It's on his private property.
But that's what I thought. But let me not mislead you. Okay. But that's what I thought when I read Litzorech Rabin, that Rashi is telling you that it was in his backyard and private property, but Litzorech Rabin. But then I read the next part of the Rashi. Kigon, Rashi says, Be'emtza Aderech. Now the words Be'emtza Aderech indicate that it was planted in a Rishus HaRabin. In other words, now we have according to Rashi, two preconditions that were both of which were met in order to make it into Natua L'Rabim. Number one, it was Litzorech Rabim, and number two, it was in a place that's Rabim. In other words, not only was the purpose of the planting for the benefit of the Rabim, but also the location of the tree that was planted was Barabim. It was in Emtzai Derech, Rashi calls the middle of the road, which means it was in a public area. And on that double condition, we have now here on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lahotzi es hanatua l'rabim, that there's no Iser Arla in the case of Natua l'rabim. So now, according to Rashi, Rabbi Yehuda's leniency, allowing the fruits of this tree even during the first 3 years and completely nulling and voiding the Iser Arla is based on the fact that we have met two conditions. Number one, it was Natua B'Emtza Derech in a public area. Number two, it was Natua La Rabin, meaning Litzorech Rabin, for the purpose of the Rabin. On that case, where we check off two boxes and two conditions were met, that it's both in a public area and it's for the benefit of the public, says Rashi, here we have the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda against the Chachamim, that is no Iser Arla. However, the Chachamim logically would have accepted Rabbi Yehuda, because this is not your private kind of planting, except for the word lachem. The word lachem, said the Chachamim, was an extra word, and as we said before, it sort of throws us off, because we even thought that lachem means I'm allowed to have hanor from it. But here the word lachem is written dafka to expand the scope of Arla. We would have thought, if not for the word lachem, the Rabbi Yehuda is right. We have to understand why Rabbi Yehuda thinks he's right, but right now we think Rabbi Yehuda's wrong only because of the word lachem. Rabbi Yehuda's right logically in the absence of the extra ribu of the word lachem, but lachem comes to tell you that even a tree that's lachem, and Rashi says lachem in two ways, because two conditions have been met, it was both lachem in the sense that the area in which it was planted is lachem, and number two, it was planted for the purpose of lachem. And on this case, the Chachamim say, although Rabbi Yehuda's right logically, but we have the extra word lachem to expand the scope of Arla to include even this case. So the Chachamim say there is Arla, and there is a violation of Arla. We have to tell the public, stay away from this tree during the first 3 years, you know, right on a placard, you know, from year X till year Y, come back in 3 years' time, and then you can enjoy the benefit of the fruits. That's according to the Chachamim. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I don't have that word lachem. What do you mean I don't have the word lachem? So that's the Gemara is going to work very hard to try to explain what Rabbi Yehuda is going to do with the word lachem. Ad kan shitas rash. Tosus has an amazing scholarship here, a piece of scholarship to disprove Rashi's Shita. And it's all based on a Mishnah in Masechta Arla, at the very beginning of Masechta Arla. At the very beginning of Masechta Arla, the Mishnah first presents the machlokes between the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda, and then the Mishnah goes on to tell you a case where everybody, even Rabbi Yehuda, agrees that there is an Iser Arla. Do you follow me so far? Meaning that the Mishnah in Orla has two parts to it. First, in the Reish, it presents the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, and then in the Sefer, it tells you that there's one case where even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's Osir in Orla. And the Reish, which again records the machlokas, says Notea lo rabim, and the Sefer says Notea birshus rabim. What do you notice about the difference between the Reish and the Sefer? And again, there's going to be an afkavina lalocha according to Rabbi Yehuda, that in the Reish, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say there is no Orla. That's called Notea lo rabim. What does that imply? Lo rabim
for
the benefit of the rabim. That's our magnanimous fellow. And then in the Sefer, where even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's also the Orla, that's called Notea Birshus Rabbim. Yeah. Tosa says apparently these are two different categories. Rashi made a big boo-boo over here, says Tosa. The accusation against Rashi is very severe. How could Rashi possibly identify Litzorech Rabbim, right, La Rabbim, which is the Reish of the Mishnah in Orla, and the Machlokes Shin Rabbi Yehuda Chacham, and Rashi adds that it was B'emtza derech. Well, what do you mean B'emtza derech? B'emtza derech is a case where even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you're chayv in Orla. The only time that Rabbi Yehuda exempts you from Orla is because you're this magnanimous fellow and you're planting it for the purpose of Rabbim. There's no private interest here. Interest meaning benefit here in your plan. You don't scheme to enjoy the fruit. You know, a person works very hard and he plants a tree. You know, it's not so easy to make sure that the tree will produce. And he does it for the sake of Rabbim. Here Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what? If he did it for the sake of Rabbim, then we sort of nullify his private element here, his interest here. He's not interested in his own benefit, and therefore it's exempt from Orla.
Can I ask a question?
Just 1 second, just so I don't lose my trend of thought, and I'm right with you, Don, just a second. But in the case of Notea Birshus Rabbim, and apparently there he's interested in his own benefit. You remember I told you before that you could have something that's planted in a public area but for your own purposes. Let's say you live in the vicinity, you're going to make sure that everybody knows that you put in all the work tending, you know, plant, not only planting but watering this, and you did it for your own purposes. Here the Mishnah tells us that even though you planted it in a public area, you're chayev in Orla, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Go ahead.
Okay, so I guess it's based upon what the last thing you said, it's a two-part question. So, Bederech, a rabbin, is indicating, according to Rashi, that it's in the public, it's in the Rashut HaRabin, but the guy's planting it. So there's two conditions. One, that he's planting it in the rabbin, and he's planting it for the rabbin.
Exactly.
Right? But Tosafot is saying,
and on that case, Rabbi Yehuda says there's no Orla.
No Orla. So how is that different from Barashut HaRabin? I mean, it's in the public place, but is he now planting it? But you're saying he's planting it for himself in the public place?
Right. And Rabbi Yehuda says that I admit in this case that he's chayav, even though he was no tabrishus or rab.
Because it's for him.
Yeah, that's going to be the punchline here. Okay. In other words, Tosa says that Rashi is confusing us. He's presenting an overlap of two elements which are absolutely separated by the Mishnah. In a case of la rabim, meaning l'tzorach harabim, Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter. But in the case where you planted it in a public area, Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayav. So how could Rashi piggyback both together and say that notei la rabim means he planted a b'emtza derech? That's a different case. That's a case where even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you're chayav in Orla. So the Pnei Yehoshua, in order to defend Rashi, says that what Rashi meant to say was that when Rabbi Yehuda admits that you're chayav in Orla in Notei Birshus HaRabim, that's because you planted it for your own personal purposes. But if Lu Yitzuyu, you planted it for the Rabim, and it was Birshus HaRabim, that's what's called in the Lashon HaMishnah La Rabim, meaning not only was it in Rishus Rab, but it was also La Rabim. So you had two conditions. That's where Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter from Orla. But in Notea Birshus HaRabim, but Litzorech Atzmo, for his own personal selfish purposes, that's where Rabbi Yehuda would admit, since you've only fulfilled one condition to be potter from Orla, but you're lacking the second condition. You have one condition in the fact that you planted it in the Derech, but you're lacking the second condition of Litzorech Rabim, That's where Rabbi Yehuda admits that you're chayef. The machlokas between Chachom and Rabbi Yehuda is in the case where you have both conditions. Not only did you plant it in the Rishus HaRabim, but also for the sake of the Rabim. So let me just read to you the language of the Pnei Yoshua. Kosava Pnei Yoshua, the Yishuv Divrei Rashi, meaning to defend Rashi, Shanotel HaRabim. Rashi understood that the case of Notel HaRabim, which is our case here in Masechta Psachim, and it's also the Reisha of the Mishnah in Orla that Tosis refers to, Hainu Shemiskaimim Shnei Tnaim, that there are two conditions that were met. Number one, Shenotel Tzorech HaRabim, and number two, Shunot HaBershus HaRabim. Here's where we have machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Whereas the Chachamim say that he's chayv in Orla because of the drush of Lachem, as we said before, Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter from Orla. Then we go on to the next case, which is listed in the Mishnah in Orla, namely Notea Birshus HaRabim. Hainu, Shenotah Birshus HaRabim Achle Tzorech Atzmo, for the Tzorech of the Yachid, not for the Tzorech of the Rabim. Ubazeh, in that case, where you're missing the second condition of Litzorech Rabim, even though you have the first condition of Bershus HaRabim, Kuli Alma Modi, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you're chayv in Orla.
What did he do with Lachem there?
Okay, that's going to be the next sugya. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the word Lachem? But I'm just pointing out here that Tosfos has a position here and a raya against Rashi, but then the Pnei Yoshua comes to Rashi's defense to answer up the Kash of Tosfos.
I'm confused now. So Tosfos doesn't use Lachem?
Well, we're not up to Tosfos yet. I just want to get... my goal right now, again, we'll get to Tosfos in just a minute, okay. But first Rashi. You know, if I can understand Rashi, then I give myself a pat on the back. And I can only understand Rashi based on this Pnei Yoshua. So the Pnei Yoshua is saying the following. There's case number one, where there's going to be a machlokus between the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda. There's going to be case number two, where even Rabbi Yehuda admits that you're chayv in Orla. Case number one, which is the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, is described in the Mishnah and also here in our Gemara Pesachim as Notel L'Rabim, which means not only did he plant it in a public area, but is also Litzorech Rabim. Rabbi Yehuda says if you have both A plus B, then you're potter. However, the next part of the Mishnah says Notel Bershus HaRabim means it wasn't planted for the purpose of the Rabim, to allow the Rabim to benefit from the fruit, but it was planted in Rishus HaRabim. That alone, which is only one condition, is not sufficient for Rabbi Yehuda to be poter. Rabbi Yehuda admits that you're chayv in Orla, because although you were notel Birshus HaRabim, you weren't notel Litzorech Rabim. So far, so good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can a person actually do that?
Physically?
No.
Or?
Halachically. To plant something in Rishus HaRabim.
That's what I pointed out before. Don't ask me what the municipality is going to say to him. Maybe they'll sue him, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
You know, that the Choshen Mishpah part of this sugya, I'm not familiar with. You know, I'm just trying to get by the Yoredeya part of this sugya. So yeah.
We had it in our neighborhood. You plant something in your backyard, but then it grows over the fence line, and it's in the public way. Right, and you get a notice from the city saying
they remove it. Right, you know, but here apparently, even if the fruits are for his own personal purposes, the rabbim have no objection because it affords beautifies the landscape, or maybe it gives shade. Okay. Now, now let's mention the flip side. Again, this is for the chart. What happens if he planted in his own backyard for the purpose of Rabim? Everybody would agree it's chayv in Orla. Why? Because we need two conditions, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to be potter from Orla. It's got to be, number one, in a Rishus HaRabim, and it has to be, number two, Litzorech Rabim. Here he planted in his backyard. He's very magnanimous. He puts up a big sign, Kol Dichvin, anyone come in. But nevertheless, since he planted it in his... Basically, what we're saying is that Rabbi Yehuda's argument against the Chachamim to pater you from Orla is only when we completely remove from the Yachid and we're totally in the limelight of the Rabbim. Any connection to the Yachid is enough, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to be Machayev you in Orla. He admits to the Chachamim. And there are two ways where you could be connected to the Yachid. Number one is you plant it in your own backyard, or number two, you plant it in Rishus Rabbah, but for your own personal purposes. In both of those cases, you have one condition without the other, but the condition that was not met anchors you into the Yachid. Once you're a little bit anchored into the Yachid, into the private domain, then even Rabbi Yehuda agrees you're Chayv and Orla. When does Rabbi Yehuda disagree with Chacham? When we completely sever your relationship to the Yachid, and it's purely Rabbim. It's located in the Rabbim, and it's for the purpose of the Rabbim. Okay. Now we're up to Tosfos. Wait, 1 second. I'll reiterate what I think I said. I don't remember what I said, but what I think I said was that if it's completely cut off from the Yachid, number one, it's planted in a public area, number two, for the purpose of the Rabbim, then Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter from Orla. Because Rabbi Yehuda's argument is, can I take this tree and the fruits that grow on it completely out of the relationship to the Yachid and put it into the public light? That's going to be the patur of Orla, which Rabbi Yehuda is going to derive in a minute from Psukim. How do I get it completely into the public area? Number one, it's for the purpose of the public. That's called the tzorach harab. Number two, it's birshus harab. It's b'emtzah derech in a public area.
But the chachamim say that in that case, then it's still
in all cases.
Because
again, the word lachem is telling you that even though this tree belongs to the rabbim in every sense, both in terms of its location, in terms of who's going to be invited to eat the fruits, lachem. Lachem is an inclusion, and that's again the thrust of our sugya. Why did the Torah have to add lachem? We said, you know, lachem is a little bit confusing to us. It sort of misled us, because lachem implied that it's mutar b'ano, which is not true. So the answer is lachem is telling me a gevaldig chiddush, that we're going to expand the scope of Orla to include even the rabbim. And when I say the rabbim, the most extreme case of rabbim, where you completely cut off from the yachid, that's called lachem. I'm just going to add something for myself. I'm talking to myself. I don't want you to listen into that conversation. No eavesdropping, because it's only going to confuse you. But in Sfiras HaOmer, the Torah says, "Usfartem lachem mimach seshav." So the Gemara says that the counting of the Omer is a communal obligation. The Chizkuni in his Pirush Al Torah elucidates this. The Torah never gave a date for Chag HaShavuos. You know, we assume it's the 6th of Sivan. The Gemara actually says in Rosh Hashanah, it could be on the 5th of Sivan, it could be on the 7th of Sivan. It all depends on the counting of the Omer. And back in the day when they had Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah, so then it could come out that the 50th day after the Omer is brought might be either the 5th, the 6th, or the 7th of Sivan. Now, who's in charge of counting the Omer? Our minhag is, as you know, that each and every one of us counts the Omer. But the Chizkuni says that Bezdin, the court of Israel, has the prime, if I call it the prime responsibility to count the Omer. Why? Because only Bezdin, that's the high court of Israel, let's say he is 71 elders, right? Only they can determine the Moadim, you know, which day is Chag HaShavuos. You're a great guy, but you can't determine for all of Klal Yisrael when Shavuos is going to be. But I'm just pointing out that the word Lachem indicates a different nature of the mitzvah. And in the flip side, in Isurim, we talk about Orel as an Isur, the Lachem in the Pasuk, again, let's just read the Pasuk one more time. The Pasuk says, Shalosh Shanim Yeh Lachem Arelim, etc. Lachem takes the Isur Orel and puts it into a communal area. That just like the fruit of the tree, the first 3 years is Orla in a private area, in the private enterprise, the private sector, even in the public sector, there's something called Orla. That's called Lachem. And Chachamim took the ball and they ran with it all the way to the goal line. And they said that includes a case where you have both elements of the public sector. Number one, it was actually planted in the public center. Number two, it was planted for the public center.
Is there such a thing in the Gzeirah Shavah from a perush? You say,
I can just say that maybe lakatam lachem is a little bit of kash on what on everything I said, because the mitzvah of lulav is not in any way in the public sector; it's in the private sector. So why does the Torah say lachem and lulav? So you maybe want to philosophize about that, you know, and give me something called a tovatchem. I don't know. You might come up with some explanation, but in a pure halachic world, the word lachem takes something out of the private sector and puts it into the public sector.
We're not exempt from
Orlam. Which Esrogim? Esrogim that belong to the public, you mean? Or what? I don't know. But what do they call in, you know, I know in my in-laws live on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, but all over the world, there's a center for, you know, it's owned by the government. It's for... you know, sort of like for homeless people to come and get some
a shelter,
like a public shelter, you know, things like that. I'm not sure the word I'm looking for, but there are certain institutions that I assume, again, in all the West, I'm just familiar with from the States, that those institutions are for the benefit of the public. You know, you may have educational things or programs for adult education programs. You know what I'm talking about?
They're public shelters.
I don't know if they're called shelters. I'm not sure. Maybe that's the word. But I think there's a difference.
Community center. We have them here as well.
Community
center.
Community centers.
Like,
and they,
a matnas?
Like a matnas. They offer classes for older people. Yeah. You know, it's not, you don't have to be old, but I'm saying, you know, for people who are retired. They're those kind of centers, you know.
That doesn't seem like also.
You know, it keeps people occupied. Mm-hmm. You know, they have programs and they have different things going on. So that's called lachem. You know, it's built on public ground and it's dedicated to the public. On that case, according to Rashi, on that kind of a case in a tree that's producing fruit, we have machlokas the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether or not you're chayiv and orla.
So no matter what, we only have these four quadrants that you're talking about, mm-hmm. whether it's public or private, and whether it's for the benefit of the individual or not.
Right.
But it's how you derive each of those four boxes from the pesukim that are going to lead us to determining.
Right. Right. But I just wanted to fill in
according to Rabbi Yehuda or the Chachamim.
So right now, how many boxes would you have in your?
We start with four.
Tavla. Chart.
You start with four, but then each one of those need to be subdivided.
Well, no, I'm just talking about the halachas now. You're talking about the derivations,
halachas,
right?
Are only four.
Four. Okay, so that's before we get to Tosfos. When we introduce Tosfos into the equation, now the chart becomes a little bit more complicated. But Tosfos says the following, that Natua L'Rabim, which is the Reisha of the Mishnah, that's our Sugi here in Pesachim, which is the subject of Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon, means that it's Natua Bershus HaYochid L'Tzorech HaRabim, which means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you only need one condition to be met in order to remove the Orla from the private sector and place it in the public sector and therefore exempt Orla, and that means Litzorech Rabim.
No, you said Bitzorech.
Litzorech Rabim. If I ever said the word Bitzorech Rabim, forget it. I made a mistake. It was a slip of the tongue. It's always going to be Litzorech Rabim.
Natua L'Rabim Litzorech Rabim.
No, it's Natua Bershus HaYochid L'tzorech Rabim, and Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter, meaning all you need is one condition to remove you from Arla, and that is, what's your ultimate goal? Who's going to enjoy the benefits of these fruits? The Rabim. If the community as a whole is going to enjoy the benefits of the fruit, that takes it out of the Iser Arla, despite the fact that the tree was planted on public
rishus.
Do you see now the difference between Tosfos and Rashi? Private property. The difference between Rashi and Tosfos is that Rashi's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda requires a complete, as we call it, nituk. Okay, that word in modern Hebrew has a lot of political implications. Hit not could. But you have to be completely cut off from the yachid, which means that Rabbi Yehuda only exempts you from all according to Rashi if you have both conditions. It's got to be notua b'emtza derech, and it has to be lo rabim. Whereas Tosfos says that Rabbi Yehuda only needs one element, and that is the element of Litzorech Rab. Now, What would Tosfos say about the following? I don't want you to answer this question. This is a rhetorical question. I'm not asking for an answer because you definitely will give me the wrong answer. I would give you the wrong answer, not just you. What would be the deal, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it was Natua Birshus HaRabim, if it was planted in the public, but Litzarech HaYochid? So we said before that according to Tosfos, Rabbi Yehuda patters you from all if one condition is met. That's not exactly true.
Depends upon which of the conditions. Which,
exactly. Only in the case where it was Litzorech Rabim, that's where Rabbi Yehuda makes a big deal about the public nature. And what was your intention? Will you invite the public? That makes it into a public netia, and therefore you're not chayv in olam. But if you planted a tree, and again, you know, Reuven is bothered by the reality of this, but if there's a reality of planting a tree in a public area, and let's assume that the public in some way benefits from it, but your purpose is that you want the fruit exclusively for yourself, or maybe the members of your household, but you're not going to allow anyone else to take the fruit, in that case, even Rabbi Yehuda would say, you're chayv in orla. And it's very interesting because the Mishnah says that in the Sefer, if you remember, that was the Mishnah Orla that Tosfos made a big deal about, it says, Notea Birshus HaRabim Chayev Ba'Orla. And Tosfos is going to say that you're Chayev in Orla because you're interested in the fruits for yourself, and that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, will be sufficient to connect it to the Yachid and therefore be Mechayev in Orla. Even though you planted a Birshus HaRabim. But the Reisha of the Mishnah in Orla, which is quoted here in our Sugya Psochim, is Notea La Rabim. That's where Rabbi Yehuda said that since it's La Rabim for the purpose of the Rabim, therefore you're potter from Orla. Good. So that's going to be, if we want to summarize the Machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos, be in what case, in what scenario would Rabbi Yehuda say you're potter from Orla? Rashi would say you're only potter from Orla if two conditions are met. If there's anything that anchors you back to the Yochid, whether it's where you planted it or what your purpose is, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you're chayv in Orla. Tosfos says that from Rabbi Yehuda's perspective, there's only one question that's critical, and that is Litzorech Mi. Was it for the purpose of the Rabbin? I don't care where you planted it, it's going to be potter from Orla. And then there's the case of Notea Li Yochid. Litzorech HaYochid, I don't care where you planted, even if you planted Rishus HaRabim, then you're Chayev in Orla, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. My time with the Tanakhama, back to our Sugya. Where did the Tanakhama derive that conclusion that even a tree that's public, it's in the public sector, nevertheless it's included in the Yisur Orla, Dichsiv, because of the following scenario. Okay. Now this scenario is what's called Prat Klal Uprat. Let's see how this works. Dichsiv. Again, all this is in Parshas Kedosha. It says Unetatem. The next part of the pasuk is Kol Eitz Machol Unetatem. And according to the Chachamim, we're going to see where Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, the word unetatem implies liyachid. Because, let me ask you the question, in 99 out of 100 people, if you would take a census, what answer would they give to the following question? Why are you bothering to plant a tree with all the sweat and toil that's involved? And what's going to be the answer? We live in a free enterprise, you know, capitalist society.
For benefit.
For whose benefit?
I want my fruit.
For my own benefit. You know, it's a real hassle to plant a tree. And I'm talking about a fruit-producing tree. And it's not just the planting. It's everything that goes beyond the planting. That's what a tree, forget about it. I mean, it's so difficult to produce a sroge. That's why they charge, you know, to the sky's the limit. But in any event, so netatem, In the classic scenario, means liyachid. Again, we're going to see Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this point, but let's get the Chachamim sheeted down. Who plants trees? The answer is the yachid. Okay? If this be the case, then lo rabim lo mashma. If the Torah would have stopped here, I would not know that the Iser Orla encompasses even the case of lo rabim. Kasav rachmona lachem. So now we have what's called a miut or a prat, and then we have a klal. And what that means is when you start with a miut and then you have a ribui, because again the word lachem seems to indicate even the public sector, is kasav rachmona lachem lahavi to include es hanatua l'rab. So again, let's just review it. According to the Chachamim, we start with a simple understanding of the pasuk, which is unetatem, and that seems to mean that it was in the private sector, or at least for the private purposes, my own selfish purposes, me, myself, and I. I'm egocentric. And then the Torah says, lachem, that the Iser of Arl applies to a tree and its fruits, even though it was lachem in the public center. So we start with a prat, and then we go to a klal. And therefore the principle is, ein b'prat elamasha b'klal, meaning we expand based on the ribui that comes after the miut. That, I think, is pretty straightforward. Now we get to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds the following. Oh, no. Unetatem, he's got a much more magnanimous, optimistic view of faith in man. Mashma bein l'rabim bein l'yochit. The word unetatem is a general word. It's all inclusive. There's no focus or exclusion on any case whatsoever. Unetatem, you planted the tree. Why did you plant the tree? Well, it could be you planted the tree for the sake of the yochid. Could be you planted the tree for the sake of rabim. Okay. Now, v'lachem, the pasuk says, unetatem lachem. And what is the word lachem teaching me? Bein yochid, bein rabim mashma. The word lachem is what we call a ribui. Now it's a funny kind of scenario here. The mechanics here, the logistics are very odd. Why? Because you have the Torah repeating itself in effect. Why is the Torah repeating itself? Because the word anatatem is a general word that includes any kind of netiyah, even a netiyah for the sake of the rabbim. And then the Torah says lachem, that the Iser Arla includes even the public sector. That's called, in the syntax of Torah drush, of darshaning the Torah, ribui achar ribui. You don't have to ask me to write this on the board, because I'm just reading the next words in the Gemara, so you can underline the words in the Gemara. Ribui achar ribui. What does that mean? You have two inclusions, both of which are telling you the same exact thing, as they both have the ultimate identical goal, namely that the Iser Arla includes the Rabbim. And here's the paradox. We have a rule in interpreting Torah Shebichtav that if the Torah repeats a ribui, then paradoxically that's a mute. And that's called, in the language of the Shas, ein ribui achar ribui el lamayit. When the Torah repeats a ribui, it's coming to exclude something, namely the public sector. So therefore, an eitz natua l'rabim is part of moral acquaintance. Again, this is all predicated on one single premise, that the word unetatem is not referring to what normally motivates people to plant the tree, which is the Chachamim's understanding the word unetatem, and that limits it to the case of yochid, but rather unetatem is a general term, which is all-inclusive, unetatem, in any scenario, for whatever purpose, you planted the tree. That makes unetatem a ribui to include even the Tzorch Rabin. Now you have the word lachem, which admittedly, according to both Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda, is another ribui to include the public sector. The difference between Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda is that whereas the Chachamim have only one ribui, Rabbi Yehuda has two ribuis. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the word netatim is a ribui. The Chacham say netatim is referring to, as I said before, 99 out of 100 people who plant a tree for their own personal purposes and benefits. And now we have one ribui called Lachem to set up Arla in a broader scope to include even Larab in the public sector. And that's going to be a bona fide ribui. I'm going to draw the proper conclusions. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, the word unetatim is not the way the Chachamim say, that we look at both kibba shetach, we see who and what people do when they plant the tree, what's their purpose, what's their agenda, what's their goal. No, the word unetatim, insofar as it doesn't qualify, is itself a ribui. Unetatim, whatever netiyah, whatever planting you did, for whatever purpose, in all scenarios, unetatem, that's included in Arla. Now, after that ribui, which includes the public sector, paradoxically, we have another ribui called lachem, and now it's a second ribui. According to Chacham, the word lachem is the only singular ribui. Does everybody have that? According to the Rabbi Yehuda, there's a ribui built on a ribui. The word lachem is piggybacked on the first ribui of unetatem, and then we apply the principle of ein ribui acher ribui el lamai. David? Fascinating. The whole machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim can be reduced to one question, and that is how to interpret the word unetatem. Two perspectives. The Chachamim's perspective is that unetatem means generally how. I say bashetach. How do you plant? Who plants? For what purposes? What is agenda? What motivates a person to plant? All those psychological questions will shed a light on how to interpret the word unetatem. And the answer to all those questions is one and the same. It's litzorech hayochid. That's the shita of the Chachamim. The rest is history. Once the word unetatem indicates only the yachid, then the word lachem is the ribui to indicate the rabbim and include the rabbim. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, understands unetatem not from a psychological perspective in terms of motivation. We're not asking, what most people would do, candid camera kind of thing. But unetatem means any kind of netiyah. And once you interpret unetatem as any kind of netiyah, we're looking at the heft of the netiyah, not the psychological motivation for the netiyah, then it becomes a ribui to include the rabbim. Ah, now you have lachem. Lachem itself is a ribui to include the rabbim. One inclusion on top of the other inclusion becomes an exclusion.
Question.
Yeah.
Going back to the Tanakhama. In this case, he's saying because it's netatem, and he's saying because an individual always has to be the one who's planting it.
No. He's asking a psychological question about motivation. What is your interest? Again, I'm assuming that unetatem requires a heck of a lot of work. Okay. You can't just, I always think sometimes if I'm eating a peach or something, I'll take the pit. Throw it in the ground, come back in 10 years, I'm going to have a peach tree. It just doesn't happen. I tried it many times. It didn't work. Not just with peaches. I tried it with every single fruit. It never bore fruit. Planting requires, there's a whole science, of what it means to plant. Maybe one day science will become so technologically advanced you won't have to plant trees. You'll be able to take a pill and it'll have all the nutrients that you need. That'll solve all the problem of, how many billions, what percentage of the world population is suffering from undernourishment. I think it's 1 out of 3 people on this earth, if I'm not mistaken, are suffering from undernourishment. But in the meantime, we need fruits. And maybe we should bless God for that, because fruits are great. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I love fruits. I mean, if you gave me nothing, put me on a desert island and all I have was fruits, I'm a happy camper. All I need is fruits. And the list of fruits that are on my list are, it's a very long list. Okay. So generally speaking, netiyah to plant requires a lot of work. So the motivational question is, why? Why are you bothering with this? Are you Joe Magnanimous? What example can I give of a person who does everything for the benefit of the public? I don't know if there's an English word that classifies such a person.
Selfless.
Yeah, but I'm saying, is there like a famous, a case in Greek mythology or something, in the literature of somebody that everything he does is for the benefit of the public? Okay, Yehuda's going to Google this for me and he'll get back to me. Okay. So the answer is that unetatem is not referring, according to the Chachamim, to that magnanimous person. It's a miut. It's talking about classic netiyah, 99% of the netiyah. What motivates your average Joe on the street to plant a tree and all the work and all the sweat and toil that's entailed within? The answer is liyoch.
For himself.
Okay. Then the Torah, with the word of netatem, is excluding from Arla the case of that magnanimous person of Litzorich and Rav.
Lachem excludes that particular person.
Well, wait a minute. I'm holding now by unetatem, correct? Lachem comes to include that person, because what does the word lachem mean? Lachem means for the benefit of the rabbin. So we started with unetatem, and then we excluded the case of that magnanimous fellow. I wish I had a name for him, you know, that we could all relate to. I don't have a name. You know, we'll call him Joe Magnanimous, right? So this Joe Magnanimous was excluded from the parish of Arla by virtue of the word unetatem, because we're asking what would motivate your average Joe, not this Joe Magnanimous, to plant a tree. Now the Torah says lachem. The Torah is addressing the case of Joe Magnanimous and including him in Arla. That's called a miut followed by a ribui. And when you have a miut followed by a ribui, then what wins out is the ribui. Now we have Rabbi Yehuda says unetatem is a general category. It's all inclusive. And therefore it's already a ribui to include the Joe Magnanimous. And now the Torah says lachem. Well, that's a repeat performance. Another ribui is ein ribui acha ribui ela. And now we start the sugya for today. This was all just an introduction.
So, we just want to get the miut would be what we were excluding.
According to the Chachamim, not Rabbi Yehuda, the word unetatem is excluding that magnanimous fellow who plants for the sake of Rabbi.
And then, according to Rabbi Yehuda,
that's a ribui. Right. Because any netiyah is included. I call it the chefza netiyah, meaning the actual act of netiyah.
But Rabbi Yehuda also says that would be a ribui lachem, and that excludes.
And then we have the principle of ribui achar ribui, right? We piggyback one ribui on top of another ribui. Because the netatem includes all netiyah, even for the sake of the rabbin. So lachem includes all netiyah, even for the sake of rabbin. Why did the Torah repeat that ribui? And then we apply the principle of ein ribui achar ribui el lamai to exclude the public sector.
So according to Rabbi Yehuda, lachem is a ribui.
Everybody agrees lachem is
a
ribui.
No, it's a miut.
No. Everybody agrees. This you have to get straight. I don't want you to leave this.
I understand that everybody agrees that there's a
that lachem.
No.
I'm saying you're a step ahead of me. Let's backtrack. Everybody agrees that lachem is a ribui. It's very important to me that you have that straight. Yes. There was never a debate about that. The debate was how to interpret unetatem. Is netatem a ribui or a miut? Rabbi Yehuda held that unetatem was a ribui. Hence, we have a ribui of lachem, which is piggybacked on top of the ribui of netatem. Is a ribui achrimachmai. Chachomim held the netiyah itself, unetatem was a miut, and then lachem is a ribui. So then, in a tug of war between the miut and the ribui wins out, and we end up with the ribui. Hence, even a tree that was planted in the public sector is also included in Arla. That's the Shitas Chachamim, because an etatem is a miut. Because an etatem is referring to your motivational factor, and that excludes this Joe Magnanimous. The Rabbi Yehuda came along and said, no, the word an etatem is a ribui. And the paradox here is that dafka because Rabbi Yehuda held that unetatem is a ribui, he's going to exclude the case of l'rabim, because now we have lachem as a second ribui and ein ribui achar ribui el lamai.
Is there any significance to the fact that unetatem is plural?
Well, I think unetatem is plural because it's addressing the entire public, meaning Reuven planted his tree, Shimon planted his tree, so we talk to the public in plural. Now we get to the subject of today's shiur. The only problem is we have about 5 minutes left. So we're going to have to do the whole sugya in 5 minutes. I'm just kidding. And that's the sugya of Truma, and here's where you get excited, because we're talking about the Kohen. Okay, then. Any other Kohen here in the audience? No, we have only one Kohen. All right. Somebody asked me a question today, an interesting question. If you duchen today?
No.
No, yesterday? Day before? Okay, you're busy working on your papers here. But let's say in theory,
I have something to improve upon.
Yeah, when was the last time you duchened? Last Shabbos maybe?
Shabbos.
Okay, so Shabbos you duchened. Now, imagine the following. You come down from the duchen, and somebody comes over to you and says, Yashar Koach. Did it ever happen to you?
All the time.
All the time. So what do you respond?
Nothing. It's us or...
Oh, wow. Phil, I'm very impressed.
You should be the coach.
This is a tshuva of the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim from 100 years ago. His name was Rav Tzvi Hirsch Frank, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and he paskins that there's a problem here. If you say Baruch Tia, which is the classic response to Yashar Koach, then you're adding an extra bracha. Now, if let's say after you get an aliyah, because very often the Kohen gets Kohen, right? It's almost built into the system. So then he comes down from his aliyah and somebody says, Yashar Koach, you could say Baruch Tia. Because that's already not an addendum, that's not a tagline to the original Birchas Kohen.
What if you just, you don't say anything, but you put the hand out, so you shake the hand.
Yeah, that might be okay. Anything. Yeah, I think it's the bracha. You know, if you add a bracha, and the Torah gave you three brachas, and now you add a fourth, that's probably... a lot of the poskim are making on this, but I'm just telling you, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank made a whole issue about this.
You know why the Kohen has to get Kohen, and why he always does the benching and everything? Because he has to accumulate mitzvot, because every time he gets up to Duchen, he gives away his mitzvot to the Rebbe.
Oh, very good. He's so selfless. He fits into the tool of Rabbi. Yeah,
exactly. I learned another reason in terms of if you say Yashar Koach to a Kohen, the Kohen should not be responding because we should not be receiving... it's like the Kohen would then be receiving a benefit for his giving up the bracha. So we should not be saying anything to the Kohen, and he should not be responding.
So again, let's we have 3 minutes. I'm sorry, I got a Varei Truma. So Truma is designated for the Kohen, and if you're not at Kohen, the Torah says Rachmana Omar Kol Zar Lo Yochal Kodesh. Now, since the word achil appears in the pasuk, we press the button of Rabbi Avo, and Rabbi Avo says that whenever it says achil, it includes even what? Hana. Utna, now we're in trouble, because we have a Mishnah. And this Mishnah, in Masechta Erevin, is going to teach me that Truma is mutter b'hana. And that's going to be a problem for Rabbi Avo. This is a beautiful proof for Chizkiah, because even though it says Lo Yochal, nevertheless it's Mutar Ba'anah, because Chizkiah is adamant that the word Achila, when the Torah prohibits Achila, is just that. And therefore, Truma is Mutar Ba'anah. But according to Rabbi Avo, that Achila by definition includes even Hanah, how could the Mishnah in Erevin allow a non-Kohen to benefit from Truma? Now, how does a non-Kohen benefit from Truma? Truma, by definition, is foodstuff. Let me ask you another question. Why does the Mishnah in Erevin, of all places in Shas, if I was looking for a source for the Heter Hanah, that a non-Kohen is allowed to benefit from Truma, I would not anticipate that it should be in Masechta Erevin. I would think it would belong to Masechta Trumos. Because in Erevin is something called a Ruvei Tchumen. Okay, let's talk about a Ruvei Tchumen. The Torah says that you're not allowed to go out of the city limits on Shabbos more than 2,000 Amah. However, there's something called a Ruvei Tchumen, which allows, if it's done right, it permits going even an extra 2,000 Amah. And that's important for someone who's got to take care of something important on Shabbos, and he has to go from one city to the next, and it's a long trip.
Is this if you place something at the end of the...
Excellent. So what is a Ruvei Tchumen? Just give me a minute, only because we're pressed for time, and I apologize. A Ruvei Tchumen means that you put at the end of these 2,000 Amos, again, this has to be done in Erev Shabbos, you put food stuff. It's called Mazon Shtei Sudos. I'm not going to get into the details today because that's for Sunday. But you put food that's edible and that you're allowed to eat at that distance. And that's called in the Lashon HaShas to be Koveya Di Rosso. It's as if he sets up his domicile at that place where his food is. You know, we're Jewish, so everything depends upon food, right? In any event, from that point, we'll call it location X where he put the food on Erev Shabbos, he's allowed to go another 2,000 amos. That's called Erev Tchumen. But again, the food has to be edible. Now the word edible here has a double meaning, and both is correct. A plus B. Edible means it's physically edible. It's not nifsal. It hasn't spoiled. It's edible. And number two, the word edible here means that it's halachically edible. Now in this case, the person who put out the Erev Tchumen, this food stuff, was not a Kohen. And number two, what did he place? Truma. Now, by putting the Truma down, by definition, he's benefiting from the Truma. He's not a Kohen, and he's enjoying the benefits of the Truma, because as a result of this Truma, he's allowed to walk another 2,000 amos. And the Mishnah in Erevin tells me that there's no problem. It's absolutely permissible. Let the non-Kohen called a Zar, let him place the food for the Erev Tchumen. That's Truma. Apparently Truma is Mutar Bano. The first part of the Mishnah is Yayin for Nazir. And the Mishnah establishes, and then we're going to have the Sugi of Nazir, that even Yayin for Nazir is Mutar Bano. So that even though by placing the Yayin, this Nazir placed the Yayin 2,000 amos for an Erev Tchumen, how is he allowed to benefit from Yayin when the Torah says you're not allowed to drink this wine? The answer is that Yayin is also Mutar Bano. That's going to be the next sugya, because according to Rabbi Avo, we have no clue why Yayin for a Nazir is Mutar Bano. But now we're focused on the Sefer, that Mishnah in Erevin, which says Li Yisrael Betruma, meaning that a Yisrael who puts down Truma as an Erev Tchumen, even though he benefits from that Truma, because now he's allowed, he's permitted to walk another 2,000 amos, nevertheless, it's Mutar. And the question is, according to Rabbi Avo, who sees in the word Lo Yeochel or Lo Yochal, whatever Lashon Machil the Torah uses, that includes even Yisrael Noah, and since the Torah prohibits a Zar from eating Truma, ipso facto, according to Rabbi Avo, it has to include an Yisrael Noah, how can the Zar use Truma for his benefit as a means to create an Erev that will permit him to go an extra 2,000 amos? He is violating the Yisrael HaNoah. And as I told you at the beginning of our discussion today, there's a magic word that when the Torah employs that word, it indicates that it's yours to benefit from and you're allowed to have HaNoah. What is that word? Lachem. Omar HaPopo Shaini Hasam. In the case of Truma is different. The Omar Kra, the Torah says, I'll read the whole pasuk to you in Parashat Shlach. It says, V'nechshav lachem trumaschem. Trumaschem means shalachem tehei. The Torah went out of its way to allow Hana in the case of a Zar vis-a-vis Truma. Hence, the Zar could use Truma, as the missionary formulates it, for the sake of an Erev. But now we have to ask the question, as we always do, turn it around to Chizkiah. According to Chizkiah, why did the Torah have to add this word Trumaschem to be Mater Hanah in the case of a Zar and Truma? After all, the Torah only prohibits a Zar from Achilas Truma. And according to Chizkiah, when it says Achila, it means only Achila. That's the Gemara's Kasha of the Idach. And the Gemara answers Trumaschem Dechol Yisrael Ka'omar. That the reason why Chizkiah holds that we need the word Lachem or Trumaschem is because the Torah is speaking, as we said before, Jerry, to the entire public. And when the Torah speaks to the entire public, it uses the plural, Dechol Yisrael. Every single Jew has to be careful about Truma, and therefore the Torah says, V'nechshav Lachem Trumaschem. The Kohen has to be careful with the Truma to make sure that he's not metame the Truma, make sure he eats the Truma. And the Yisrael has to be careful about Trumaschem, that he has to deliver it to the Kohen, that he's not allowed to eat it. And the word Trumaschem is a general word in the plural that addresses the entire community of Klal Yisrael. I'll just take this opportunity to wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. If anyone has any questions, please stay. And if anyone wants to learn a little bit of Parsha, a little bit of Chumash, with Hashkofa, we get together at Mitzvah Hashem at 10:40. Shabbat Shalom to everyone. And it's been a great week, and we really, I think, you know, at the beginning of the week, I got very upset, because I realized nobody was following me. You know, and I really... But as soon as you get the mechanics here of Chizkiah and Avo and Rabbi Avo, everything is simple. I mean, again, it's not simple, but I'm saying then there's a Hava Mina, we can understand this sugya. So again, we have a long weekend coming up. right, between now and Monday, Tuesday, Monday, right? Sunday. It's a long week until Sunday. And by then you're going to forget about Chizki and Avo. So I'm going to ask you over the course of the next few days to keep reminding yourself. Write it down on a piece of paper, and every couple of hours, take a look at the paper. Chizkiya says Achila means just Achila. Rabbi Avol says Achila means Hana. And if you keep that in mind, we can start on Sunday and move forward. Yes, sure. Just don't lose my place if you don't mind. Any questions? Oh, we're okay. Okay. So that's good.